Blog Talk Radio.
In the music world, there is only one Music City. Now, come with us behind the scenes and meet the people who make the music, the talent behind the talent. Industry insiders telling you how to make it in the music business. And now, here's your host, David Lowry, live from Music City.
Welcome to Live from Music City. Today is Tuesday, June 1st. I'm your host, David Lowry, along with the David Bowers. We're coming to you live from Nashville, Tennessee, as we do every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Central Time. We've got another great show for you this evening. Joining us later will be Bob Shane and Bill Zorn of the Kingston Trio, a group that's been playing and recording for over 50 years. They'll be talking with us and answering your questions, so be sure to email us at livefrommusiccity@blogtalkradio.com. or log into our chat room and ask your questions. You can also reach us on Twitter at LFMC Radio, and we'll be monitoring that as well. But we'll be talking with Bob Shane first about his experiences from founding the group to their meteoric rise and success over the years. And later after that, Bill Zorn will be discussing the Kingston Trio today and what's going on with them now, how they've managed to continue to be in an in-demand group, as well as his expertise for artists looking to get their break. So we've got kind of a past and present show for you tonight with one group that's been around a really long time. But first, we'll chat about recent music news and things that are going on with the world of entertainment. Mr. Bowers, are you there?
Well, thank you, Mr. Lowry. Yes, I am here. And I do have a question for you before we get into the news. I was just curious. How do you feel about interviewing a group that's been around longer than you have?
Well, I feel pretty good about that, actually. I feel nice and young, so you know, I don't get to say that very often. Oh my gosh, our chat room has exploded with guests. I like that. Well, anyway. Yes, absolutely. Let's get
Welcome
on with
everybody
the
in our chat room, including the ones that are identified only by numbers. What are we, live in Folsom tonight, or what?
Folsom County Prison, I don't know.
Okay, we got a lot to talk about tonight, and we want to give Bob and Bill all the time we possibly can, so I'm going to jump into this right now. The first big news today was Live Nation announced they'll roll out a massive price promotion this weekend. As a matter of fact, they actually rolled it out today. No service fee in June. That eliminates service fees on nearly 8 million tickets with more than 700 shows and 110 artists. Every show, every ticket, every artist, every amphitheater they own will have no service fees this month. And that comes straight from Live Nation's CEO of Concert Division, Jason Garner. He told Billboard Business that among the artists included are Dave Matthews Band, Jonas Brothers, Jimmy Buffett, Kiss, Kings of Leon, Ozzfest, Fish, Rush, Tim McGraw, Tom Petty, and the Heartbreakers, and many, many more. This promotion
awesome.
Follows heavy discounting they did last year, including No Service Fee Wednesdays, which ran for about 10 weeks. And Garner says that the promotional efforts moved about 800,000 incremental tickets, addressing an apparent industry-wide problem of unsold inventory. As he says, you start with the premise that 80% of the shows do not sell out, and 40% of all tickets go unsold. And despite last year's economic downturn, average per-show gross and attendance in North America were actually up 7.6% and 8% respectively. That's according to Billboard Box Score, and it's the first time average attendance has outpaced gross in over 10 years. Last year, with no service fee Wednesdays, Live Nation achieved what they feel is how to get incremental fans into the venues, as Garner said. He adds that internal customer research indicates fans overwhelmingly preferred the no service fee promotion to other discounts. He said it saves fans about 20% for reserve seating, about 25% for lawn seating, about $12 to $13 off the average ticket price. Given that service fees are a significant revenue stream for Live Nation as a venue operator and promoter, the promotion begs the question, will ancillary revenues from increased ticket sales offset the lost revenue from eliminating the fees? Garner says the goal is to fill every seat this summer. We know that if we do that, we win. The industry wins, the artist wins, and the fan wins. Last year, Live Nation's critics said such promotions encouraged fans to wait for discounts, among other criticisms. Garner expects that this year's campaign will have its critics as well. Tickets for No Service Fee June are available only at LiveNation.com. So keep that in mind. Don't go to your local ticket broker and expect it. It begins today, will remain in effect until 11:59 p.m. Wednesday, June 30th. That's your last moment to take advantage of this.
That's pretty interesting. We've seen a lot of backlash this year with some of the promotions that have gone on with places like Live Nation. The ticket sales are down this year, and artists are suffering, and tours are being cut short because of it. But what we're seeing is a backlash of they'll start with a pre-ticket sale. When a CD comes out or a tour is announced, they'll do the pre-sales, and people jump in there and buy the really expensive tickets and whatever, and you know, to be able to see their favorite artists. And then a few weeks later, when ticket sales are way down, a company comes in and jumps in and says, well, I'll tell you what, to increase sales, we'll do a two-for-one. Mm-hmm. And that really irritates all the people that just spent $300 or whatever on a ticket to see their favorite artist. Now everybody else is doing two-for-ones. And so there's been a big backlash. There's actually been a big thing going on just this week about all this. So it's interesting that they're doing that. I think that's a better deal than doing the two-for-one for sure. And it should help put people in the seats. Without, you know, anybody who tours knows that the money's in the merchandise. So without people there to purchase the merchandise, then the artists aren't making as much money. And a lot of the rest of they do, you know, depending on the gig or whatever, they're paying a lot of fees off of those ticket sales. So they aren't making as much off the ticket sales. So this is a, you know, it makes more sense to have more people in seats without the service fee than to charge the additional service fee. So I think this is a good move.
Oh, I 100% agree, and I think it's a far better move than their no service fees Wednesdays, which is, I don't know, that's just too restrictive. I mean, okay, if you happen to buy your tickets on a Wednesday, you get the deal. The rest of the time, you don't. I think this is a lot fairer. And it's at the beginning of the season, so I think it'll be a very, very effective promotion for them.
It should be. It better be.
Other news today. I'm sorry, did you have something else to add?
I was going to say, and this is really one of the best ways that people can support their favorite artist by going to see the live show. I mean, if you really want to make a difference in their career, then this is, you know, this is where it needs to be. And you know, bring people along that have never seen the artist. Introduce them to a new music and fan base and you know, this, we're going back to grassroots campaigns here where artists are making a living off their touring and growing their fan base by playing live. And so for those people who really want to see their artists succeed, you know, it only behooves them to go to the shows more than anything else, and to bring new people and who really haven't experienced that artist before.
Absolutely. In other news, Emmis Interactive Incorporated, if I can say that, the software and consulting company that empowers the reinvention of local media and broadcast electronics, today announced a partnership to offer a next-generation iTunes song tagging solution for the radio industry. The partnership leverages BE's data management studio system with Emmis Interactive's new proprietary tag management system, TagStation. That's a web-based application that empowers broadcasters with an easy-to-use system to manage their iTunes tagging for accurate song matching. It easily integrates with the BE, what they call their Tree on-air software connectivity, and it builds on Emmis Interactive's world-class suite of digital products, which includes Base Station and iTunes Storefront. Utilizing the company's joint tagging solution will enable listeners to tag songs played over the air by FM, RD, and HD radio receivers. Elsewhere, the Dixie Chicks have been on a recording hiatus since their 2006 album, Taking the Long Way, but the best-selling female group of all time still want to bring their fans the very best, so Legacy Recordings is releasing Playlist, the very best of the Dixie Chicks. That came out today. The new disc features 12 tracks, ranging from their breakthrough 98 hit Wide Open Spaces to their defiant Grammy-winning sensation Not Ready to Make Nice. The physical CD also comes with exclusive photos, an essay, and other bonus features. Kid Rock has enlisted some famous friends to lend their voices to his new album, Born Free, which is expected to be released September 7th. Among the guests, Zac Brown on the song Flying High, and Martina McBride, along with rapper T.I., on a tune called Care. By now, just about everyone's heard that Willie Nelson cut his hair. While the world is still trying to process the new look, Willie would like you to know that his hair isn't the only change he's undergone. He told the National Post, "Tell him I also shaved my legs." More information than we may have needed to know, but how exactly did the haircut heard around the world happen? It was pretty simple, according to Willie. "I felt like I was pulling a trailer. It had gotten so long, my hair was way down below my waist. It was a problem. It was heavy. It got dirty. I couldn't wash it because I hurt my arm playing golf. I used a 5-wood to hit a rock, and when I hurt my arm, that was the last straw. I couldn't take care of my hair by myself, and I have to have Annie, my wife, help me wash it. So now the only thing left to wonder is who did the cutting, and we can answer that for you. Willie did not go to a fancy salon. He says, I was looking for a pair of scissors, found one in the bathroom drawer, and just reached back there and grabbed the ponytail and cut it as close as I could get it. Now the only thing left is what happened to the hair. Well, we're just wondering how long till the Willie braids show up on eBay. For our Navajo listeners and those of you who remember the Stax record label, the Chinle High School band members, two of them, will be the first Navajos to attend Stax Music Academy's Snap Summer Music Camp in Memphis next month. Trumpeters Brian Bainbridge and Cody Donald will pioneer an exchange program that will also bring two young Memphis residents to the Chinle in the fall. The two 14-year-old freshmen will live with a Memphis family for a month while taking classes from professional musicians and performing at local events. They're much too young to remember the Stax Records heyday back in the 60s when the label introduced mainstream America to block genres of soul, funk, and blues, but they're anxious to learn. I picture a Memphis as a place with musicians on every street corner and a bunch of people milling around, according to Bainbridge. And for Donald, he said, it's a chance to find out what we're capable of, and hopefully a doorway to even bigger opportunities down the road. Joe Walsh has filed for a restraining order against an elderly neighbor who allegedly threatened to kill him. That's according to California court records. Walsh's attorneys filed the paperwork claiming that Nassar Adhout, who owns the property near Mount Walsh, Mr. Walsh in L.A. County, trespassed on Walsh's land earlier this month, struck one of the Eagle guitarist's personal assistants with a piece of wood, according to TMZ. And finally, just a couple of interesting notes, especially since we have guests coming in this evening who span the time frame. On this date in rock and roll, if I don't lose my voice trying to say this, on this date in rock and roll or music history, however you prefer, I get people that question my definition of rock and roll, and maybe some evening we'll have a discussion of that on the show. But in 1948, Pete Seeger formed the Weavers, which were probably the forerunners of folk music groups as we know them today, and I'm sure had an influence on the Kingston Trio. Also in 1962, on June 1st, a bunch of guys auditioned for George Martin over in England. They later went on to be known as the Beatles. You may have heard of them. A year later, 1963, a Hootenanny competition on Martha's Vineyard is won by a guy named James Taylor, who was performing with his buddy Cooch Karchmar. In 1964, and this is when the music started changing, as the trio so well knows, because this put them into their second era, the Rolling Stones arrived in America for their first North American appearances. and the music did change. Then in 1976, and this one you're going to love, Dave, because I know how much you love it, 13 of the 26 number one songs for the year 1976 were dance or disco songs. I knew you'd like that.
Now, you paint me wrong. I actually like a lot of disco music. I'm all right with it. You know, it was this era. It had its time. I know people got sick of it. And like anything else, once it's overdone and it loses its substance. But there were some quality singers. There was some great music. I certainly would never take anything away from the Bee Gees. I'm all right with that. Don't paint me with that brush. You can paint me with some other brushes, but not that one.
I'll keep that in mind.
All right.
Back to you, David. What have you got for us?
Thank you. Well, in a few minutes, we're going to have our guest, Bob Shane, come on, and he's going to talk with us, and then later, Bill Zorn. And I just want to announce a giveaway. We're going to have a 3-CD set of the Kingston Trio's all-time greatest hits autographed to the winner of the giveaway. That's 36 songs total. And we're going to have Bob on in just a second. But first, I want to play the first song to get us started so people can hear a little bit about what we're talking about. And this song is called Hard. Ain't It Hard?
Oh, well, it's hard, ain't it hard, ain't it hard to love one who never did love you. Oh, well, it's hard, ain't it hard, ain't it hard, praise God, to love one who never will be true. Well, there is a house in this old town, and that's where my true love lays around. And she sits down upon another's knee and tells him what she never will tell me. Oh, well, it's hard, ain't it hard, ain't it hard for you to love one who never did love you. Oh, well, it's hard, ain't it hard, ain't it hard, great God, to love one who never will be true. Oh, well, the first time I seen my true love, she was standing by my door. And the last time I seen her false-hearted smile, she was dead on that barroom floor.
Poor girl!
Oh, well, it's hard, ain't it hard, ain't it hard, love you. Oh, well, it's hard, ain't it hard, ain't it hard, great God, to love one who never will be true.
Well, who's gonna kiss your ruby lips? Who's gonna hold your little hand? And who's gonna do well, you know what, when I'm down in that promised land?
Hey! Oh, well, it's hard, ain't it hard, ain't it hard,
oh, yeah,
to love one who never did love you. Oh, well, it's hard, ain't it hard, ain't it hard, great God,
there, David.
I am here. I'm sorry. Of course, everything wants to just go crazy on my computer and pull away my little stop button from me to stop.
You know how I am about those pregnant pauses.
I know. I did that on purpose just for you.
Let me get
in a moment. Huh?
Let me get my pills.
You go get them. Go get those nitro pills. In a moment, we're going to have Bob Shane on. But first, I just want to let you guys know you can find out about the Kingston Trio at www.kingstontrio.com. The song you just heard was called Hard, Ain't It Hard? And right now we're going to bring on Bob Shane. Bob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good evening, Bob.
Good evening. There's something funny about hearing yourself 50 some odd years ago.
Dave, you would know what that's like, wouldn't you, Dave?
Almost. I've got some old tapes of my early days at radio, so yes, I do.
Boy, do I have, I heard you guys talking about Willie cutting his hair some time ago, and I always had short hair in the old days. So when I got started getting bald on top, I realized that if I grew my long white hair real long, people would look at the hair and not on top of the head.
That's probably true.
But I've cut it 5 times in the last 20 years. And one of them was the time we were playing in Vegas. And I got off the stage, and I was standing there next to a couple of pit bosses by one of these, what they call a dead table, what not being used. And one guy said to me, Bob, would you ever cut your hair if somebody paid you? And I said to the guy, yeah, for $1,000 cash, I'd cut my hair right now. And so he turned around, these other two guys, and they were laughing about something, and I saw some money cap pass around. And he turns around, and he reached underneath the table and pulled out a pair of felt shears, you know, for cutting green felt on the blackjack table. He hands me the shears, and he hands me $1,000 in cash, and he says, well, let's see you do it. So I took the cash in one hand and the scissors in the other, and I looked him right in the eye, and I pulled the hair back, and I cut it right off and handed him back my hair and the scissors. Now he couldn't get the money back. And he said, good grief, what are you going to do now? And I said, grow it back and get your suckers again.
Got to have a game plan.
That's the easiest $1,000 you ever made.
Absolutely.
Let's,
what are you guys doing now?
Well, having a radio show.
Oh, good.
We're trying to educate the youngins coming up through the music business how to best to tackle it, and the ways that people who have done it have made it happen in the past. And we know things are different now, but in some ways it's going back to what it was 20 or 30 years ago in terms of how to get yourself back out there with the labels not handing out these big label deals anymore. People have to go back to grassroots campaigns and have to do radio tours and all kinds of neat little things.
Oh, yeah.
We're here to kind of educate them on that a little bit and bring in some of the people who have done it and are still doing it. And the other thing that we want to impress a little bit that we never really talked about too much is that most of the record buying public, yes, I said record, most of the record buying public is over the age of 45. 55%
right.
of all the music bought is by people over the age of 45. And so, understanding that, we certainly want to bring out artists that they'll like and remember and relate to and bring some of that back to the forefront as well, not just the little hot things that are out today. Put an emphasis on that and make people realize that you're not just marketing to 18 to 25-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
So,
no, that, you know, at any age, if you feel like you've got talent and you want to get into the business, we always tell people to play to as many people as you can. You know, play anywhere. Play, you want to play the guitar and sing, you do so in your living room or people that are guests at a party or any place you can. And if you get good reactions, and I'm talking about really good reactions, you know, not people drunk.
Right.
If you get people that really say, hey, that's really good, then you might know you got something to work with and start working at it.
Well, let me ask you something here that has kind of bugged me over the last probably 10 years or more in the music scene, which is with today's music, there aren't a whole lot of bands that actually sing very good harmonies.
No.
And what do you think that it means to music to actually be able to have that ability? And was it a lot different back when you started out?
Oh, yeah. When I first met Nick Reynolds, he sang the most perfect harmony I've ever heard in my life, all his life. I mean, he was a natch. He was an absolute natural. He could harmonize to anything.
Wow.
Nowadays
wow.
they say, you know, if you cross music and Prozac, you get Muzak.
Very true. I sometimes get a little frustrated. I'll listen to the live music and whatever, and you know, with Pro Tools, you can do anything today, and you can layer your voice of 11,000 times and have this beautiful background vocal and blah blah blah. But when you go out to the show live, one of the things that's missing the most is the background vocals or the harmonies or anything like that. And it to me, it leaves such a huge gaping hole in the music, and it's a real sad thing for me. And
guys didn't know that the Kingston Trio were the first ones to do voiceovers on themselves.
No, I did not know that. Explain.
Absolute first people did. Boyle Gilmore did us and did Frank Sinatra, but the first one they ever do that was to take our and sing our exact same part over the self, so that it gave it more fullness.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yep.
You were double tracking way back then.
Absolutely. First one was in 58.
Wow.
And I heard a story that said that back in the early days when you first started, Nick had the voice, you were a tremendous singer, and you guys kind of picked your parts, and Dave had to sort of just pick his own part there for a while. You had to work with him a little bit.
We called him a utility singer.
I'd like to ask, if I may, Bob, I'd like to ask you, you started, as I recall, you started over in Hawaii. As a matter of fact, you were even an Elvis impersonator there for a little while.
I was the first Elvis impersonator in the world.
Right.
In 1956. And I ran into Elvis about 3 or 4 years later, and I told him that's how I got my start, and he said, what do you want to do that for?
Well, you sure went down a different road after that, and that's what I'm wondering, because I know when you got over to the States, when you were up in the Frisco area and you guys got together, you found out that singing guitar players met a lot of girls, which worked very well for you. What I'm wondering is, when did you first realize that you wanted to be serious about the music?
First time I realized I could get a chick.
Maybe I should rephrase the question. When did you take music seriously?
I never have. But Nick and I started singing the first day we met in college. And we really enjoyed singing. We had a great time doing it, and we started singing right away. And I told him that I was born and raised in Hawaii and that I sang some Hawaiian songs. And the first day I met him, I taught him 2 Hawaiian songs, and he sang them perfect in harmony.
Wow.
So we just had a natural feel for that kind of stuff. So we were all naturals. We just had a great time. When Nick and I had our own thing together in college, we had little cards made up that says, we sing anywhere for money. And we'd go into bars and ask them if we could play there. Nobody in the place. Within 15, 20 minutes, there'd be 40, 50 people in the place.
Wow.
They'd just come in and, you know, we realized that that was a way to meet people.
Right.
How did you direct yourself from that? When you started to get serious about music as a career, even back in those days, you had to have some idea of the direction you were going to take and how you were going to get there.
Well, we liked to sing anything. 2 of us were from Hawaii, and we started off singing Hawaiian stuff. And my first time as an act, as the single, when I was doing Elvis, I also did Hank Williams Sr., and I did Harry Belafonte. And I picked 3 different styles of people, of music to do, and what I ended up with in the long run was my own style. And we never called ourselves folk singers or anything. We just called ourselves entertainers.
And a lot of your enthusiasm and feel for it came through on stage back in those days. I've been looking, and this is one of the wonders of modern technology. There are so many video clips and films of the older occasions that are available online with places like YouTube, where you can go back and see what you looked like back then with the short hair, but the feeling comes through. There's more than just you're getting up there playing music to make some money. You can tell that you enjoy what you're doing. You're putting your heart into it.
That's right. That we had great feeling for music.
What was it like to work with some of the icons of your day, or you know, such as the Smothers Brothers or George Burns or anybody like that. What did that mean to you back then?
They were people that we admired, so many people that we worked with, and it was just wonderful to be around people that had act that we enjoyed and they enjoyed us. The Smothers Brothers were dear friends. They followed us into the Purple Onion. They were a little bit younger than we were, but when we left the Purple Onion, which was the first place we ever worked, the next act to come in was the Smothers Brothers. And they had another guy in the group. There were three guys to start with. They had a guy named Tom Gawd, who was spelled G-A-W-D. So he said it was the Smothers Brothers and God. was the act name to start with, but then they dropped the guy, Tom Gawd.
Now, I understand, Bob, that some of the old rehearsal tapes from back in those days are being engineered into a new album.
Yes, we're doing that. We had a whole bunch of stuff that was packed up in an old box and got them out, and I was absolutely pleased to find that one of them was done on an old Wallensack wire recorder that we used in a loft above the Purple Onion to record stuff that we were doing to use as live stuff in our show, and stuff that never been recorded since. It's gonna be an interesting thing. We didn't want to over clean it up. We didn't leave it pretty much the way it was. It's
sure.
Collector stuff.
Yeah, I definitely looking forward to that. And I guess that came out of your lost collection there somewhere, right?
Well, we got that, and then I found some other stuff in there that was the first New Kingston trio we had, which was started in 68, rehearsing right after we retired in 67. And then we made some tapes and things. I have a thing. I've just made my own recording about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And the first song on it was a song that came out of a Nashville writer. I think Red Lane was his name. And he did this song called The World Needs a Tune. And we did it with the Glazer Brothers band behind us live at Ryman Auditorium. And we got a fantastic reaction from it. It was recorded that day, and this was on this album that I did.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm
Oh, I didn't want to interrupt, but
I'm in my living room.
I did have a follow-up question. I got to put you on the spot on something that I've had a couple of people ask me that apparently have done a little research and found out some things. In that stash of these old recordings of yours and everything, that Tom Dooley tombstone isn't there, is it?
No, we know where it is. It's in California. It actually, when we went to the roadside cemetery for one headstone of Tom Dula in 1958, and up in North Carolina, around Ferguson, North Carolina, where Tom Dula was buried, and they pulled out I think they called it a footstone because it had TD on it, and it was the original footstone. And they pulled this thing out, and it was connected to about 300 pounds of cement underneath it, stuck to it. And they said, "Would you guys like this?" And we said, "Sure." And we got it. We airmailed it collect to our manager in San Francisco. It is now in a friend of ours' garden in Marin County, California.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's for sale.
He's still trying to recoup those shipping expenses. You know, one of the things that we hear an awful lot of from the artists that are successful, especially over a period of time, is relating to the fans, reaching the fans relating to you, the interaction between you and the fans. And I know from my own meager experience as an announcer, disc jockey, I've done some shows and things where, you know, I get up and do those clever, I'm the guy that gets up on stage and says, "And now let's hear it for the Kingston Trio." You know, I got the clever lines. You guys have had a lot of occasion where you have interacted and related with fans. I know, I remember in particular when the MTA came, or I'm sorry, no, I'm getting ahead of myself. It was the Tijuana Jail. When the Tijuana Jail song came out, there were radio stations where disc jockeys were actually taking collections on the air to send money to get you guys out of the Tijuana Jail. I remember I sent some, I think I sent bottle caps into some station in upstate New York. But you also had a big deal here not too many years ago in Boston with the MTA where they actually had you involved in that.
That's true. We did a lot of things like that.
Tell us about the MTA, because that's an ongoing thing there.
Well, just recently, in the last couple of years, they were looking for a thing to use a card in a machine for getting off and switching stations and stuff. And so they had the public make different suggestions on what to call this thing, and they ended up really calling it the Charlie card.
Right.
Like the Charlie on the MTA. And that was very nice. I got one of those right on my wall, matter of fact, the Charlie card.
I'm going to interrupt here because I found something really, really cool, and I just think this is really kind of outstanding. I'm reviewing a lot of the news on the Kingston Trio. The Kingston Trio has its own iPhone app.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all for the iPhone and the iPod Touch. That is somebody who's trying to stay, you know, relevant and in touch with their fans of all generations. I just think that is really, really cool. So you can go get that at the iPhone or the Apple Store, and you can join them on Twitter as well at twitter.com/KingstonTrio, and you can see them on YouTube at youtube.com/KingstonTrio. So you can go see all kinds of things about the Kingston Trio and catch up with them and see what's going on through the history of their career. I just think that's really neat that you have that all out there and available.
If you got the time here, I'd like to introduce you to my pal who took my place in the group when I had a heart attack and had to quit working. And he was with us from 1972 to 76 when I bought the name. And then he went to England, and for 20 years after that, he produced hit records and worked on TV and movies and all kinds of stuff. And I'd really like to have you talk to him.
Sure.
Bill Zorn.
Is Bill with us yet?
Yeah, he's with you right now. Hold on.
Oh, okay. I thought he was calling in on a different
He said
number.
He'd buy me dinner if I'd jump in and give him a little bit of a break for a few minutes. How are you?
You got that in writing, right?
I do indeed. I've already ordered the pizza. What do you mean?
I know how Bob is to work with. You want to be sure of yourself.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've had that experience, too, in the 70s, of course. So we go way back, Bob and I. No doubt about it.
Go
ahead,
David. I'm sorry. I was going to say, give us a quick update on what the Kingston Trio is kind of doing today.
Well, I earned my Charlie card that he was talking to you about. The year I joined the group, which was 6 years ago in 2004, and we have managed to survive the loss of the last original touring member, and of course for a little while everybody wondered if it would work or not. Bob still, of course, is in charge of the group, and we've gone out and made our own reputation with a show that is strong. I think if people, you know, enjoyed the music at any point in their life, back to the 60s or after, and really like this kind of folk music, you're going to hear it as good as you can, basically, with what we've been putting out. And there's a lot of theaters that have voted, you know, just by booking us back. There's a place, there's a little theater in Venice now. We are booked for our seventh straight year, and the Kingston Trio's never done that. Never had a theater that would book you every year and continue to sell out when they're doing three or four nights. So the Kingston Trio magic is still working for us, basically, and I think we do it as well as anybody could possibly want to hear it.
It is working.
Who's that?
Go ahead, David.
I was just saying it is indeed working, and you can tell, as you said, the sold-out shows. I mean, you're looking at a group that has, I don't want to say reinvented yourselves, because you haven't. Basically, you have adapted to the times, but you are still the Kingston Trio, and that's what's special about it.
Yeah, well, I think so, and credit goes to Bob, you know, because he continued to work in those years when nobody else was out there working. So he continued to put the Kingston Trio on. The audience could still see it around the country, and so when others wanted to come back and perform again, they found there was a folk audience out there, you know, because they'd been coming to the Kingston Trio shows. So he kept the whole circuit alive, and believe me, you know, in the 70s, we played some strange gigs, I'll tell you that. You know, disco was hot, bowling alleys were played in, and all sorts of things like that.
Bill?
But we made it work.
Bill, I was going to ask Bob, but since you're here now, I'll ask you, because I know it's one of Bob's favorite stories. It was one of the first ones he told me. The Kingston Trio, when they won their first Grammy, was a bit of a surprise. I'm sure it was a surprise to the guys, but it was also a surprise to the Academy. Can you tell us that story? What was unique about the first Grammy?
Well, maybe I don't know it as well as Bob. Maybe I better put him back on to reiterate. I've heard a couple different versions of what actually happened. But, of course, they got it 2 years in a row for the same song.
Right. The first one was unique, though.
Okay. All right, Bob. I better give it back over to the source. He wants to know the story of the first Grammy.
Oh, okay. In 1958, which was the first year of the Grammys, they wanted to give the Kingston Trio the Grammy for Best Folk Song. Now, you have to understand, we didn't call ourselves folk singers. Somebody else did that in order to sell records. But in 1958, they didn't have a folk singing category. So they looked around and found part of our business that was close, that needed a lot of help. In 1957 and 58, country music was all but dead in sales. And so they called the Kingston Trio. They gave us the first Grammy ever given for Best Country and Western Presentation of the Year for the song Tom Dooley. The next year, they added a folk singing category, and they gave us the first folk singing category ever given for Best Folk Presentation of the Year for our album At Large.
Fantastic. I remember you telling me that story, Bob, and if anyone is wondering, Bob also knows where both of those Grammy Awards are.
Yeah, they're on a shelf right behind me.
Thank you, Bob. And I think right now would be a good time for us to cut to the music if David Lowery is ready, because we're standing by with this song is Bob Shane. This is your signature song, Bob. David, Scotch and Soda.
Here it is, Scotch and Soda. Take a listen.
Scotch and soda, mud in your eye, baby, do I feel high, oh me, oh my, do I feel high. Dry martini, jigger of gin, oh, what a spell you've got me in, oh my, do I feel high.
Well, I had to call up
people won't believe me, they'll think that I'm just bragging, but I could feel the way I do. Still be on the wagon. All I need is one of your smiles, sunshine of your eye. Oh me, oh my, do I feel higher than a kite can fly. Give me loving, baby, I feel high. Though people won't believe me, they'll think that I'm just bragging. But I could feel the way I do, still be on the wagon. All I need is one of your smiles, sunshine of your eyes, oh me, oh my. Do I feel higher than a kite can fly? Give me loving, baby, I feel high.
That was Scotch and Soda by Bob Shane and the Kingston Trio. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to give you the question for the 3-CD pack of the Kingston Trio's greatest hits, a total of 36 songs. So whoever in the chat room can tell me what category they won their first Grammy in will win that prize package. What category did they win their first Grammy in? All right, who do we have on the phone with us now?
Me? Bye.
All right. All right. Just making sure. All right. So, Bob, tell me, what's the vision going forward for the trio?
Well, you got to understand, first of all, I haven't been a singer now for several years. In 2003, I had a heart attack in the doorway of an airplane. We used to say, too much fun is not enough. Of a sudden, it became enough. And so I've been on oxygen ever since. However, when the guys are playing in up in Vegas or in Laughlin or concerts in Palm Desert or Palm Springs, I'll go down and sing with them a few songs. But other than that, the group stays on the road about 30 weeks a year, except this year has been a very slow year because of the economy. And we're hoping it'll pick back up again next year, but it's kind of squirrely.
Well, I was looking at your schedule, and you're booked well into next year. I noticed you got a pretty good month of February down in Florida alone.
Yeah, that's a good. Winter times are good. In the old days, they called it corrective booking. They put you north in the winter and south in the summer. Yeah, corrective.
Corrective. I think it's a booking agency that could need some correction.
Absolutely. You know, it's been a really enjoyable piece of work on the road all these years, because we usually think about this is our 52nd year.
Amazing.
And it's quite amazing. There are a lot of people around nowadays. A group out of Atlanta called Banks and Shane that does a thing about the Kingston Trio, and then there's an act on the West Coast that does it's like what did they call that? A tribute show, you know.
Right.
And I said to me, tribute shows are only for people who are dead, you know. And I said, I'm still alive.
I think that's pretty high praise in itself that they didn't wait until you were gone to do a tribute show.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, you know, all the other guys in the group that have been in the group from the original two groups, with Dave passed away in 95, and then Nick Reynolds and John Stewart just in the last 2 years, and lost a lot of friends.
And, you know, I got the privilege of seeing you guys, thanks to your invitation, as a matter of fact, to seeing you guys the last time you did play together, and that was at your fantasy camp.
That's right.
And that is an amazing amazing program you've put together there. If I remember correctly, that was partly Nick's idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, they first did their first one, I think, in 1999. And this year is the 11th one. 2010 is the 11th one.
For the listeners who are not familiar with it, this is a fantastic program. I've never known another group that has put on something like this where the average fan can actually become involved with the group. Tell us about how it comes together, Bob.
Well, the Kingston Trio Fantasy Camp has been a thing of product of Nick Reynolds and John Stewart. When they passed away a couple of years ago, my wife, Bobby, and I decided we just keep it going. And about between 27 and 30 guys a year pay a certain fee to come and put trios together and become one of the Kingston Trio and sing with the group itself on stage, taking turns. And it has to come, anything they do has to be a Kingston Trio recording, original recording of that song. Since the recording we made were over 350, they have a pretty easy shot. So you don't get too many people repeating one. But it's a lot of fun. It was the last 4 days, and we have guest artists that come in. This year we have one of my dearest friends is Josh White Jr., whose father actually taught me how to play the guitar. And we have Sally and Jim Ratz that were with the Runaway Express group out of Denver. And we have Jim Connor, who was with me the New Kingston Trio, one of the best hammer and claw banjo player ever existed. And of course we have the Kingston Trio, the current Kingston Trio, which is Bill Zorn and George Grove, who's been with the group for 31 years, and Rick Doherty, who took Glenn Yarbrough's place when he left the Limelighters many years ago. And we've really had a lot of fun. It's open to the public too, because we do three shows a night, and they can come in for probably $10 or $20 at the door, and we put in about 400 people a shot and have a great time there, and it's just it's wonderful. So people get to see what other people are doing of our style with us, and then doing the Kingston Trio by itself. I do a solo and Discussion Soda and a couple other songs every once in a while. It's a lot of fun.
It is, and I remember when I was fortunate enough to be able to go there. It's not something you really want to wait to the last minute to get yourself to, because these guys still sell out. All you got to do is say the Kingston Trio, and there's a line forming there for tickets. Believe me.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, if they want to do it, we'll do a second show. Who cares? You know. Money is the root of all evil. Yes.
Guys, let me cut in here, and let me just say we do have a winner for the contest, and I want to say congratulations to MJ Smith for winning the grand prize, and hopefully they will give me their contact information, and we can get that prize out to them. Oh, they already got it to me. They are quick. They are quick. Mike Smith, that's his name. Mike Smith, congratulations, and thank
Where's
you.
Where is he from?
He is from Minneapolis, off of Lowry Avenue. Can you believe it? Wow.
Oh,
God.
What's great about it, too, is that Mike Smith is the guy that wrote one of my favorite songs. He's called The Dutchman.
You know, we had another person who sang some of your songs. And you also did at least one of his on your first solo album. Kevin McCrell was on our show a few weeks ago.
Oh, that's great. Kevin was a great guy. We saw him at a bar up in Saratoga, New York, about 8 or 10 years ago. I finally recorded that song and put it on my album.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And he talks very highly of you as well. I know he wanted to be able to call in tonight and surprise you, but I guess he got. I don't know if he had a show to do or what it was, but he spoke very highly of you and wanted to be remembered to you.
Well, thank you very much. Another great act, believe me.
He's working on a new group now.
Okay.
Creating
a new one.
Of
course, you know, you were talking about the 70s, and Bjorn Ulvaeus, who was a very dear friend of mine, was the leader and writer from ABBA. And he asked me to come over when they first put out Mamma Mia in 2000 over in San Francisco. I went out to be his guest, and I sat next to him during the show, and he was going through some bad money problems. And when they finished the show, I turned to him and said, "I've heard every musical comedy we've ever heard in number one in the country all my life." And I said, "I got to tell you something. You're going to be very, very wealthy soon."
Wow.
And he is.
He is. Yes, he is. Mike Smith wants to say hi to Bob and Bill. He says he's been a Trio fan for many years and
great.
Saw Bill and the Trio back in a concert in March. So I guess it must have been in the Minneapolis area.
We used to play there a lot. Haven't played there for a while. In fact, our drummer left us after many years, and he lives across the river over what is that little town? He lives in a little town over in Wisconsin someplace.
That's my stomping grounds. I used to live there in the Eden Prairie and Burnsville area for a long time.
Yeah.
I love Minneapolis.
We need to get back up in the Northeast, too.
Absolutely.
I'm from the far west. Really far west.
I remember.
I'm a fifth generation from Hawaii. My great-great-grandfather was a Congregational missionary who sailed there from New Bedford, Massachusetts. Went to Hawaii to do good and did well.
That seems to run in the family, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Bob, let me ask you. Go ahead.
My favorite statement that anybody could use, it's an old Professor Irwin Corey line when he said, "Remember one thing in life, any one thing."
That sounds like. Bob, what?
Okay. Well, I'm getting time. I got to go get some dinner.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. Yeah, is Bill still there?
Oh, hold on.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
It's a Passover.
Best way.
No comment.
Greetings and thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, you've had a pretty colorful background yourself. I was doing a little. Sometimes I actually get to do a little bit of research and find things out. I found a couple of interesting things. I know you had worked with a couple of the biggest folk groups in American history, or in recent American history anyway, the New Christy Minstrels, which
I've been a sucker all my life.
Yeah.
Yep.
You were the leader of that group for 4 years, which I guess was the longest single tenure of anyone that led them. You were also with the Limelighters. But you started at an early age. You won an award as a variety host as a teenager.
I got involved right in high school, and you know, I realized I have been in a folk group for over 45 years, constantly, one group or another. Basically, it started in high school, and I was lucky enough to get involved, you know, with local television here in Phoenix as well, and doors opened up. You know, it was very, very. It was a great time, and we were. A lot of the people that I was involved with musically are still involved musically, you know, in many different levels and that kind of thing. From that era, we had a particularly good group of people that, you know, performed well and took a serious approach to it all, you know, and they've all stayed with it. So there's been a lot of good friends along the way, and you know, I basically did it from high school time until the end of the 60s, putting together those kind of groups, and then went straight into the Christmas, did another 4 years of it. So I had about 10 years of putting together, you know, the folk chorus things, and then met Bob while I was on the road with the Christies, and we fell in pretty quickly in those days, and as soon as there was an opportunity in the trio, he knew anybody that's been in the Christy Minstrels is going to want to be in the Kingston Trio, right? I said, yeah, you got me. so straight over and worked with him in the 70s. And then even the time I was in England, you know, everything else I was doing, I was always performing in folk groups over there, you know. So
I was going to say, you had a hit group with a hit record over there in England, and you produced albums here and there. But what's even more interesting is the fact, in addition to all of these things which you've already mentioned, you've published a bunch of songs. You've done voiceovers for documentaries. You've even done voiceovers for cartoons. And you even did comedy and dramatical acting.
Isn't it something, you know? When I was in high school and I thought about all the things you want to do in life, I said, well, I'd like to do a little bit of everything. I'd like to do this. I'd like to be in the crowd in the back in a movie, you know. And you know, there have been times when I had to mumble in French, you know, and things like that. And dub over cartoons. And I worked with Catherine Zeta-Jones on her very first film production. Hey, 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 things like that, you know.
Hey.
Never a dull moment. Never a dull moment, absolutely. You know,
I've done a few different things myself, but I always figured it was just because I haven't figured out what I want to be when I grow up yet. But
I think we're together in that one, man. I think so, you know. And hope we never do, basically.
You got that. Listen, Bill, let me ask you something.
Yep.
The difference between being a performing artist, a musician, a singer, or part of a group, and making a career of it, how would you define that?
I think it's just, it's a matter of sticking it out. It's a decision early on that you make, I'm going to do this. I've met people along the way that said, you know, I got into this because it was an easy way to make a buck, or I got into this because it was an easy way to, you know, be known or get women, whatever the case may be, with the exception of Bob Shane, which everything worked for him. It often doesn't
work. He was born under a lucky star.
Oh, man, no doubt about that. He was born under a beer sign, I'm sure of that. But I think it's something that you feel inside from an early age, that this is something I'm going to do, and you take every opportunity to do it, you know what I mean? And that's certainly the way it was for my associates and I when we were starting out. You know, we said, if we get an opportunity, we're just going to take it. That's all there is to it. And,
gentlemen.
Yep.
I was going to say, we have a caller calling in. We don't get this very often. Now, I don't have the ability to take this call off the air and do the switchboard. So when we do this, we're open to anything that can possibly happen, but I have a feeling we're pretty safe. So let's take this caller and see if they have a question for us.
Let's do it.
Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Who's calling?
Jim Combs.
Hey, Jim. What's your question?
This is for Bill Zorn.
Okay.
First, thank you very much for the production of Bob's latest album. You did a great job on that.
Thank you.
And a while back, the trio, when they were doing club dates, they did a song called It Ain't Love, But It Ain't Bad. You know, you know what I'm talking about. Will they ever, by chance, record that?
Whoa, there's a real question for you. And in fact, I was at the center of that because I instigated the writing of that. We have very rarely performed it in the old days. When we were doing live in Reno, it wasn't on those recordings, or we might have included it. But frankly, there was no recording of it. It ain't love, but it ain't bad. We were just talking about this song only a little while ago. And it might actually be the only song the Kingston Trio ever sat down and wrote from scratch. They rewrote a lot of songs, but it might possibly be the only original song the group ever wrote. And I don't think you have much hope of hearing it, although I have heard that a few groups have copied it along the way over the years. I don't see the current lineup doing it. I have performed it occasionally in Europe to guffaws and reactions of enjoyment. They like to laugh at Americans anyway.
I also gave a copy of one of your concerts in Flint, Michigan.
Wow.
When you were promoting your new album. I gave a copy to George Grove when you were up in Florida at a concert.
I see. Right.
I didn't know. I told him in a letter that the Kingston Trio can have the album if they can get somebody to, it's a video, if they could update the video and possibly use it on their website. Or if they come out with a DVD for it. It's kind of rough because I went out and bought the camera when I heard you were in town. So it's the first time.
I see what you mean, yeah. Well, there are a few things like that, yeah.
But you're welcome to it. So George has
okay.
the copy.
I'll check with George. You've sent that to George already, eh?
Actually, I hand-delivered it to him at one of your concerts. We were in
the first row there. Have to see if there's anything, you know, if it's usable, basically. Yeah, it's amazing what comes out of the archives these days. Things on YouTube, I don't know where they came from.
I don't know how to put it on, or I would, but I think I'd rather give it to Bob Shane and you to put or use it.
Yeah, yeah, maybe even there's a few little bits we can lift from it or something.
Yep.
Sure. Well, we thank you for your call, Jeff. We appreciate you taking the time to do that. Callers, if you want to call in, please. Give us a shout at 917-889-3829 to be able to talk with us. David, do you have any more questions?
Oh, absolutely, and I love the fact that you figured out how to do that telephone thing. Come on, people, let's put him to work. He's got a new play.
Bring him on.
I love it when a guitar player gets technical. That's the frosting on the cake for me. And I'll tell you another
one on the folk scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What kind of strings do you use? That's about where it ends.
let me ask you a question. This is a little bit off topic, but I always kind of wonder when something comes out about a particular industry, you know, like a back when they did the Spinal Tap, they did a rockumentary on rock bands or whatever, mockumentary. They did the same thing for the folk music scene called A Mighty Wind. Did you ever happen to see that?
Naturally, of course, we know quite a lot about it. And you know, of course, it's the same group.
Right, oh yeah, But, I mean, what is the feel what does the industry think about that when something comes out like that and pokes a little fun at it?
Oh, well, I mean, if you can't laugh at yourself, you know, well, how can anybody else laugh at you? You know what I mean? So
right.
we embrace it. There were people who begged to be on the movie and were turned down. People like the Loudon Wainwrights of the world and Ry Cooter said, could I just be in the background somewhere playing on a street corner? And Christopher Guest said, had to turn him down. He said, we can't have anybody with any actual credibility in this movie. But, they really were the right people to play those parts because they've been writing folk songs for decades.
Go back to
the early National Lampoon stuff, and you'll see Christopher Guest and all of those, and then there were a lot of folk songs in there. So I mean, they had a good feel for the music, and did it wonderfully. So, you know, no doubt about it. They actually went on before they had released the movie, and they were getting their act together. They did a couple of concerts, including one with the Kingston Trio at UCLA in the early '90s, when they went on stage and nobody knew who they were as the Folksmen. And did their songs. And completely confused the audience.
Wow.
And then a couple years later, there was a Spinal Tap concert live in San Francisco, right?
Right.
And they went on as the Folksmen to be the opening act, the warm-up act for Spinal Tap. They got booed off stage. The movie hadn't come out. Nobody knew who they were. They got booed off stage, went backstage and changed their clothes and went on a Spinal Tap.
Oh, my gosh.
So they really lived it. There's no doubt about
it. Well, and they also played as a folk band in the Spinal Tap movie, and I don't remember what they called themselves there, but they did do that. So there was kind of a foreshadowing of that happening. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Town Hall in New York. Yeah, the gig. Oh yeah, it's wonderful. Wonderful stuff. And so close to the mark. That's all we can say without risking anybody, getting their feelings hurt. And I think it's true. The Spinal Tap, when it came out, 30 years ago, didn't make mm-hmm. much of a splash. It came out again 10 years later, and people started to get into it, and then it came back again. And
right.
I think the Mighty Wind is one of those that, in 10 years you'll look at it again, and it'll be a little funnier, and, in another 10 years. Bob's making comments in the background.
I can hear it.
Us, he said. It wasn't us.
Oh, we have another caller. We have another caller. All right. Welcome to Live from Music City. Who's calling?
Hey, so it's Wayne from Austin, Texas.
Hey, Wayne, welcome. What can we do for you?
Well, I know Bob, and I know Bill, and I'm a fantasy camp guy. And I'm going back to my second fantasy camp this year. It's going to be great. It's something that everybody should participate in. And I just wanted to call in and thank the trio and thank Bob for the rejuvenation of my singing and playing career.
Congratulations. Keep it up, buddy. Keep it up. We'll see you there.
And we'll be back. And Bill and I sang Ball of Wine last year, kind of unrehearsed, but we got through it, and it was great.
Yeah, we can improve on this. It's great.
Well,
because,
and I'm gonna take the Bill's own part, Bill's horn part this year, hopefully, and flute John B. And I'm practicing every night, and he's a tough act to follow. So tell Bob I'm still working on a guitar that I want to buy from him. So. Y'all have a great night.
I'll pass that on. We'll see you in August, and we'll be ready for you.
All right. Thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it.
It is great to watch, because some of these guys, we watch them come back year after year, and they do get better. They do get better,
All right.
And now it's gotten to the point where some of them are saying, hey, we gotta get off on Sunday, because we've got a show on Monday. We're gigging back in, Evansville or Chicago or whatever. So they're starting to get work out of it too,
That's awesome. Again, folks, if you want to call in and ask a question, you can call in at 917-889-3829 to Live from Music City and speak with the Kingston Trio. Dave, do you have any more questions?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Bill, one of the cuts that I found, which we used in promoting this show tonight with you and Bob, was a take you did, and I don't remember exactly when and where it was, but I know that I grabbed on it immediately because it was perfect for this Memorial Day weekend. It was a story you told before singing the song about the Reuben James. Can you retell that?
Exactly. Yes. It's true, and it was this weekend, but about 10 years ago. You
amazing.
Want to hear that?
Yes, I'd love for you to tell the folks about it.
Okay, because it's true, and it did happen. This would have been actually the late 90s, and I'm thinking it was about 98. In between the years, I was in the Kingston Trio, of course, and some friends of mine from Phoenix had been asked to play at the Sacramento Jazz Festival, which runs over this weekend. And it's a big jazz festival, biggest in the world, lots of people. And since I was free, I said I'll go along and sit in and play a little bit, bring my banjo, and was having a great time. And the night before the Memorial Day concert, one of the organizers pulled me aside and said, Bill, I know you used to be in the Kingston Trio, and I wonder if you'd do something for us tomorrow at the Memorial Day concert. Could you possibly sing the story of the sinking of the Reuben James in the concert? So, of course, I said, yeah, well, I'd love to, of course. That'd be great. And then as he walked away, I realized this is one of those songs where everybody sings a verse. So So I know my verse and the chorus. So I got to think, oh, geez. I managed to get through it, got all the verses right, told the story, and afterwards there were present a couple of those military historians, and they said, we'd like to meet you. We got a great story about the Reuben James. And I said, we were just at the reunion for all the navies of World War II, which would have taken place in, I think, 96, in San Diego. All the guys from different navies all around the world were there to meet and talk. And he said, and I met the commander of the German U-boat that sunk the Reuben James. He was there. And though the captain of the Reuben James had actually survived the war, he wasn't alive. However, if you know the story, 44 men were saved from the Reuben James, and the reason they were saved is because her sister ship, another destroyer, cut her engines and pulled them out of the water against all the rules of engagement, of course, which are speed up and start zigzagging. So this captain, the one of the other ship, he was there, and he met the captain of the German U-boat that had sunk the Reuben James. And he knew that this guy must also have had him in his sights. So he asked the question he'd been waiting, you know, 50 years to ask, why didn't you sink me too? And the German commander said, well, strictly speaking, we were under orders not to sink any American military vessels. Und I knew this would be a big problem. The Führer would not be happy, and it would probably bring the Americans into the war. So I figured one ship is enough. Click, and that was it. So we tell that story and then go into the song. But it did really happen, and I believe the encounter is genuine.
It's a wonderful, wonderful story, Bill. We're going to take a break right now. We're not going to play Reuben James. We played that as a promo. We are going to play Road to Freedom, and we'll come back. A couple of closing questions for you. And, David, if you're ready, we're going to hear the Road to Freedom.
Here we
go. Thank you. Thank you. I'll let Bob close, shall I?
Whichever, or both of you can say goodnight.
Okay, I'll say goodnight and pass it to Bob when you go.
All right, Bill.
Freedom is a long, long way to go.
right, that was Road to Freedom by the Kingston Trio. Dave, are you with us?
Wasn't that great?
That was.
Absolutely.
Remember them?
Yeah, I've heard them somewhere.
Gotta be good. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you guys. Thanks very much. We wish you all the best.
Bill, we want to thank you for joining us, and Bob also.
Always a pleasure. I'll tell you what, I'll let you have a quick goodbye from Bob, and I'll say all the best to you, and we'll keep sending you product.
Absolutely. Just keep
right,
churning out
you.
That good sound.
Thank you, thank you.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Who's this?
Is it Bob?
Yeah.
Bob, you're back with us. Okay, I wasn't sure. This is Dave, and that's Dave.
Dave and Dave.
It gets
Dave
really
Dave.
Confusing. Bob,
hey,
it's been...
A good time. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, we had
okay.
a good time.
Oh,
it's a
yeah.
wonderful time. I'm so glad you guys were able to come and be with us, and we've really enjoyed it. We've had some great action on the... we even got to use our telephone call-in system tonight, which we don't get to use that too much. Before we leave, Bob, let me ask you just one quick question. If you were talking to an up-and-coming artist today and you were going to give him advice on how to further his career, how would you sum it up? What would you tell him?
Play to anybody you can, if it's a musician... and a singer, play to anybody you can, anywhere. Always get more chances to do that, so you get more feeling for what you're really doing. And then once you start getting that, get yourself a good agent. And it does not have to be a big time agent. It would be perfect if it could, but if you can't get a big time agent, get somebody that you think has a good feel for it. And then we actually told I forgot. It's a folk singer. Anyway, well, call me up. I'll tell you. Dave, you got my phone number?
Yes, I got your phone number.
Okay, well, so give me a call sometime in the morning and when I'm a little more sensible.
Oh, great, Bob. And listen, whoever was responsible for putting up the outtakes of your album recording session, I mean, after all this time, you finally did a solo album. I know I can remember bugging you when we talked back when I was in Arizona that you should do one.
That was Bill Zorn.
You did. And
that
I was
Bill
so
Zorn. He produced it for me.
He did a great job, and I'm so glad that he put the outtakes up there so... you can see some of the behind-the-scenes goings on and see what goes into it, because for my money, all right, you guys have all had a lot of talent, a lot of personality, but I think the big thing is the heart that goes into your music. That's what comes through, and I think that's one of the key factors to why I've been listening to the Kingston Trio for 52 years.
Well, that's why... when a guy asked me the other day, he says, what do you think is the difference between your singing nowadays and your singing in the early days? And I just looked at him and said, youthful soul.
A lot of heart in there, Bob, a lot of heart.
Well, we'll talk to you guys again, I certainly hope.
I would certainly hope so. Let us know when that new album comes out. Maybe you'll come back and play us a couple of cuts off of that.
You bet we will.
I would look forward to it. And I want to thank your lovely wife, Bobby, for her help as well.
I'll pass it on to her. She's a sweetheart.
She sure is, and it's a pleasure knowing all of you. I know I've met you several times. I met Bobby, and I got lucky the last time I was seeing you that I got to meet Bill as well. And
great.
It's a pleasure. Pleasure having you on the show. Thank you again, Bill, Bob and Bill.
Right.
And we'll look forward to hearing from you again real soon.
Real good. Thanks a lot again.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Good night, though.
That was a great show with some great people, with some
nice, funny, interesting stories to get out there and relate to. And
yeah, and they get the point across that there's a lot more to it than just being able to play your music.
That's right. That's right. And you know, sometimes we get lost a little bit in the minutia of being of creating a career and an image and everything like that, and all that's really important. But if you really aren't having fun with what you're doing and loving it, then it's a hard road to nowhere. So you know, it's good to hear. It's really good to hear. You know, somebody who really enjoyed the road, the process, and you know, did what they needed to do, but had a blast doing it. So, you know, we can't ever lose sight of that, and I think that's horribly important for up and comers to remember. And you know, nothing better than getting it straight from the horse's mouth by people who've been doing it their whole lives.
And that's the big thing. They love what they're doing. They love doing it. They love playing for the people, and it shows. And I know that if Bob was still healthy enough to do it, he would still be on the road.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. You can kind of hear it in his voice now. He wishes he could still do it.
That heart attack that he mentioned in the doorway of an airplane actually happened to him at Sky Harbor in Phoenix when he was coming back off the road from a tour with the trio.
Wow. Well. Yeah, at some point you got to know when your body can't take anymore, and you know, obviously he listened and didn't push it too hard. So, you know, more wisdom and everything else from everybody to learn from. You know, you just can't say enough for getting the opportunity to listen to somebody who's got all that experience, and you know, how do you quantify that? I'm just more impressed with the stories and the fun and everything that they. You know, that they brought to the table.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to think that they have carried this on for, you know, over half a century.
Absolutely. I mean, it's hard to get through this business in for 2 years and not get frustrated with it. And, you know, they're at, what, say, year 52? So... And, you know, Bob still being an active part of the whole thing, and he may not be on the road singing, but he still runs the show, and that's a
problem. Oh, yes, that he does. The thing is, he runs it the same way as he played it when he was on the road with him. He runs it with his heart. I mean, the man has the business savvy, as we've talked before, and there's more to it than just playing your music. You've got to know the business side of it, too. He does, but he does it with heart. He does it with fairness, and you can tell by the respect that Bill Zorn shows for him and the others, everyone that's ever worked with him has a respect for the man.
Right, and you know, just watching the chat room tonight and seeing how many people we had in the chat room speaks a lot to their fan base and their integrity. You know, they were excited to be on the show. They still love doing it. They still love getting out there and entertaining and performing and making people happy. So that's a great thing. But with that said, we've got about a minute and a half, so let's close it out. So thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to our guests, Bob Shane and Bill Zorn of the Kingston Trio. And thank you to all the chat room people and the people that called in. Look forward to seeing you again next Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Central. David?
And I thank you. I will look forward to seeing you then also, when our guest will be Carl Diebold, the video producer who's worked with artists like Mandy Moore, Switchfoot, Gavin DeGraw, and Godsmack. His record label clients include Sony BMG, Jive Records, Columbia Records, EMI, Atlantic Records. I think we'll learn a lot from him, too. We'll look for you then. Again, thanks to Bob Shane and Bill Zorn, as well as Bob's lovely wife, Bobby, who takes care of business at KingstonTrio.com and the Kingston Trio store, and she takes good care of Bob, too. Thanks also to our listeners in the chat room and around the world on the World Wide Web. Don't forget, our shows are archived on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes, so you can listen to them anytime. Until next week, this is the David Bowers signing off from Nashville, live from Music City.